Are you struggling in returning to exercise following a concussion? Well, if so, you're going to want to listen to this episode of the Concast. Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday. My name is Connor Collins. I'm a registered massage therapist and sports injury therapist. And welcome to the Concast, a podcast where we discuss all things health, wellness, and injuries in an attempt to better understand the human body. This is episode number 75. And for today's episode, I was actually looking back in all the episodes that I've done so far, and I thought that I'd already discussed this topic, and I think I've discussed it a little bit in or throughout other episodes, but I really wanted to devote an entire episode to this topic because I think it is a subject that I get a lot of questions about working in the field that I work in. We see it discussed often and is being discussed more and more often, and that is, how do I return to exercise, or how do I return to activity after I have had a concussion? Or I am struggling returning to exercise and I've had symptoms for a really long time. So maybe it's many, many months or even years. How is it that I get back to doing the things that I love to do? Not only just general exercise, if I'm interested in health and fitness, but maybe just my activities of daily living. Maybe I like to go hiking on the weekend and I can no longer do that. Maybe I like to garden. Maybe I like to play a certain sport. And as we know, exercise is variable and very specific to each individual. So what I'd like to do today is just talk about where some of the research is at, what I see in my practice, and what I might do in my practice to help people get back to exercise following a concussion. So for those of you that haven't listened to any previous episodes, I think it would be great to just outline what a concussion is first before we get into today's topic. So a concussion is a neural metabolic injury to the brain as a result of a physical injury to something inside the brain called the neuron. So when there is a blunt force trauma injury, so this can be a direct hit to the head, but it doesn't have to be. It can be in the form of, let's say, a car accident or a slip and fall injury, and you don't have to, in fact, lose consciousness to suffer a concussion. You may injure the neurons inside the brain, and the neurons are the cells inside the brain that help relay information between the brain and the body. So a concussion is classified as a mild traumatic brain injury. There are three classifications of brain injury: mild, moderate, and severe. So that is essentially, in a brief outline, what a concussion is, and I've done more episodes discussing in depth the things that go on in the brain following a concussion, so feel free to check those episodes out as well. But really, following a concussion, what we want to do as clinicians and what patients always want to do is they want to return themselves to their pre-injury status. They want to get back to doing the things that they love to do. And what we see post-concussion is there are symptoms that are more prominent in the population than others. And the most common symptom that we see post-concussion is post-concussive headache, more typically in the form of something called an autonomic tension-type headache, which is this headache that is bilateral, meaning it's on both sides of the head. It's either in the temporal region, just in front of the ears or above the eyes, and characterizes itself as this sort of pressure or pulsing-type pain. Now, there's some interesting discussion around tension-type headaches, but a lot of the theory around it is that they are driven by our nervous system. And post-concussion, the inability of ourselves to balance our two channels of our nervous system, our sympathetic and parasympathetic. Now, in non-concussed populations, people also suffer tension-type headaches, anywhere from a third to three-quarters of the population at some point, depending upon the research that you read. And in non-concussed populations, tension-type headaches typically don't respond negatively to exercise. They actually do quite well with exercise, or exercise as a means of reducing symptoms of tension type headache. Now, in the concussed population, because you have gone through this injury, it's a little bit different, where often exercise will exacerbate symptoms. And so what we need to try and find is a happy medium between how can we return to activities of daily living, but not exacerbate the symptoms that you as a patient are feeling, because we know that the more symptomatic you are, the more difficult it is to make a recovery, and potentially the longer time it will take for you to recover. Now, in speaking about headache, what we see in the post-concussive population is exercise intolerance is a prominent symptom as well, particularly as it relates to exacerbation of other symptoms. So what that means is if I'm going out and exercising, not only is my headache getting worse, but if I'm feeling any other symptoms, so if I might have the presence of mood disorder in the form of anxiety or depression, that might get worse. If I feel sort of that feeling of fogginess or being underwater or eye strain, that may get worse as well. And I've talked about a lot of these symptoms in depth again on other episodes. So again, if I really enjoy exercising, but exercising is creating this environment after the fact that is undesirable for me, how do I navigate that? We've heard this word exercise intolerance. What in fact is that? And it's just how it sounds. It's the inability to exercise or the inability to perform certain movements or activities because your symptoms increase following that. And this may be in the form of they might increase for a couple of hours and be unrelenting and substantial. They might increase for a couple of days. And this causes this type of roller coaster effect within your recovery where you feel good, you exercise, and then after that, you feel quite poorly for hours, days, or even weeks. And so you rest. And then your form of rest is usually pure rest. So you might sit in a dark room. You might not do anything for a few days. And then you go back to exercise. And then following that exercise, the cycle repeats itself. So what that will do is it can increase your physical symptoms. Like I mentioned, it can increase your cognitive symptoms. And then most importantly, it can affect or increase behaviors that lead to social isolation and social fallout. So for example, you might not go and participate in your weekend sports. You might not go and meet a friend for a coffee. You might not go for a walk. You might not go to work. You might isolate yourself from family and friends. We know that this has a myriad of negative consequences as a result of this initial inability to manage the physical and cognitive symptoms of concussion. So what we really want to be able to do is promote exercise in a safe and effective way that is ideally sub-symptom threshold in a means of helping us along our road to recovery. So what is exercise? Because exercise is different and relative to a particular person. My form of exercise is not going to be the same as your form of exercise. Exercise is related to a myriad of factors, including health profile, age, lifestyle, nutrition, access to resources and facilities, education, and maybe the most important is interests. What do I find interesting? Do I enjoy volleyball? Do I enjoy soccer? Am I not someone that really enjoys exercise, but I know the benefits, and so I sort of force myself to go out and be active? The reality of it is that no one person will do well with one specific form of exercise across all spectrums of individuals. But what we've tried to do in the research is understand what are the physiological benefits of exercise and recovery, and then we can take some of these concepts and try to tailor them as individual to a patient as possible. So what did our thoughts around exercise used to be as they pertain to suffering a concussion? Initially in the research, and this fact remains to be true, is the brain is in a relatively vulnerable state following a concussion, particularly in the acute phase, which is anywhere from, depending upon the research that you read, days to upwards of 30 days in certain populations. And the thought was that because the brain had gone through an injury and it was in a vulnerable state, that rest would be the best thing for that. And we had seen this in all types of medicine in the past. For example, when you got a knee surgery, you were put on bed rest. If you got a surgery for your scoliosis, you were put on bed rest. But what we've learned as we've seen advancements in medicine is active care is substantially more beneficial for the large majority of conditions versus passive care. And what we're starting to understand more and more in concussion is that is no different. So initially, what used to be prescribed is often called as cocoon therapy in the concussion world, where you were told to sit and rest or sit in a dark room until your symptoms go away and essentially wait. And if your symptoms have not gone away, you were told that you needed to wait longer. But as with everything in medicine, in the pursuit of active care, we've started to change our story around how exercise and concussion symptoms are managed post-injury. So I've used this word exercise intolerance, and this is essentially the inability for the neurometabolic system, so the brain, the spinal cord, and our metabolic structures in our body to adapt to perceived stressors after a concussion. And what this will do is it will cause symptoms, and symptoms are variable and patient specific. So for me, I might get a bilateral or two-sided headache. Someone else might feel a lot of eye strain and irritability. And every symptom that a patient is feeling is real to them and specific to them. The question is, well, why does this happen? Why, when I exercise, do my symptoms get worse? And so there's a few thoughts around why this might happen. One of them is blood flow regulation or auto-regulation within the brain. This is something that gets a little bit blunted after the acute phase of a concussion. So we can't necessarily manage blood flow within the brain, and certain areas might have a lesser blood flow than others. We also know that there's a bit of a metabolic mismatch where the energy that the brain needs and the energy that we can deliver to it because of the injury is a little bit less. And then we also know one of the big ones is a loss of vagal tone. And vagal tone is the balance between, again, those two channels of the nervous system. Sympathetic being the one that's more involved in the fight or flight response, and the parasympathetic, which is more involved in our rest and digestion and calmness. Now, one of the things that happens when we lose vagal tone is we lose our sensitivity to carbon dioxide, or it is thought that we lose our sensitivity to carbon dioxide. And one of the responses to that is hypoventilation, which means we drop our respiratory rate, particularly in environments where strenuous exercise is required. Now, in doing so, this will cause the body to retain carbon dioxide a little bit, leading to the inability for us to off-gas it or get rid of it as we exercise. The reason being is that we're not maybe breathing as hard as we would regularly have been pre-injury. This will lead to an increase in carbon dioxide, which might perpetuate some of the symptoms that we're feeling, the feelings of irritability, headache, fogginess, etc. So it's really the inability for our nervous system to balance these neurometabolic demands that lead to exercise intolerance, particularly in the acute phase. Now, as symptoms progress and as your healing process progresses, so let's say you're now months out, there may still be some loss of vagal balance and tone. There may also be other things that might be contributing to your symptoms post-exercise. There might be other systems that might be affected, so the ocular system or the eyes. There might be the vestibular system that's affected. There may also be behavioral and psychological factors. There might be a post-concussive anxiety disorder. There may not be an anxiety disorder, and you're just fearful of returning to your activities of daily living, which is also very common. So while I'm discussing exercise in isolation, again, context is everything, And there may be a number of different systems that might be playing into your exercise intolerance as things lengthen out for you in your recovery process. So the question is, where is it that we are at now with research on exercise post-concussion? We understand that active recovery, as with everything, is best. Active is generally better than passive. And we know that aerobic exercise has been shown to lead to better healing of the system over time. What this does is it also allows the patient to be an active part of their recovery. It teaches people to be resilient in the recovery process. It leads to less overall catastrophe from a psychological standpoint. And for us as clinicians that deal with concussion and looking to the evidence, this is where the majority of the evidence lies in concussion research. A lot of the other things that we're using, we're pulling from evidence in other particular circumstances, whether it be the field of optometry, whether it be the field of vestibular therapy. But when it comes to cardiovascular exercise, we actually have a lot of evidence in the concussion population specifically. And what we've seen this lead to is a lot of things that already exist out there in the form of return to sport protocols. And we've seen return to sport protocols in both adult populations and pediatric populations. We've also now seen return to school and return to work protocols that have been formed along similar lines based on the research of return to sport and exercise. And these were essentially formal guidelines for returning athlete to sport. And I think that is one of the biggest pitfalls of exercise and post-concussive return to play or sport research, is that the majority of the research that's out there is in the sport population. Now, that's great if you are an athlete. However, there are many people that I see on a day-to-day basis that are not athletes, and they are nurses or they are teachers, and they also have an equally tough time returning to their job, returning to just their general activities of daily living. And so for me, I definitely want to see more research in the use of exercise in the general population, the non-athletic population, in returning them to pre-injury status. Now, in sport, generally speaking, how athletes are returned to play is they start with some low-grade cardiovascular exercise without any influence of sport-specific skills. They'll then increase the tolerance of that exercise and maybe introduce some sport-specific skills. So if this was hockey, for example, they get on the ice and maybe skate, or initially they might just be on a bike or a treadmill. After challenging the system and having no symptoms, they might introduce things like stick handling. They would then get back to non-contact practice, then contact practice, and then return to play. So the idea behind this is this idea of graded exposure, which means kind of tapping the nervous system, the brain, and the metabolic system slowly and progressively just to the point of where symptoms might be felt, and then allowing the system to adapt and adopt, all the while making this linear progression towards improvement rather than the alternative, which is that sort of roller coaster analogy that I gave you previously, where you feel really good, you go out for a run, you have symptoms now for 2 or 3 days where you're not doing anything, you wait to feel better, and then you go for a run again, and the same cycle repeats itself. So with respect to the research on exercise and concussion recovery, particularly cardiovascular exercise, we know that it's better than control groups in the research. We know that it's better than nothing. We also know that it's better than pure rest, so just sort of resting and waiting. We know that it works well as part of mixed recovery strategies. So in the form of, let's say, using cardiovascular exercise with stretching and maybe some neck strengthening. We know that generally it leads to a quicker recovery in the athletic population. We also know that it leads to less chance of developing persistent symptoms. And there's also some interesting research looking at vagal tone and heart rate variability in the post-concussion population that sort of supports this theory of allowing the nervous system to adapt over time. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the pitfalls of this, a lot of the research is in sport populations. We know that there are many people out there that are not athletes. We also want to take all health profiles into account. Individuals with comorbid conditions, for example, if you got in a car accident, you have a concussion, but you also have persistent back pain, how might that affect your recovery? And so it's not just as simple as saying, I want you to jump on a treadmill at this heart rate. It might be a little bit more difficult than that. Now, how does this play out in the research? Many people are looking at something called the Buffalo Concussion Treadmill Test, which was developed at the University of Buffalo by John Leddy, who's a very prominent researcher in the field of cardiovascular exercise and concussion recovery. And what this is you essentially do a test where you get on a treadmill, and over a series of minutes, you're increasing the intensity of the walking on the treadmill until you get to a specific breaking point where your symptoms either rise a certain amount above baseline, or your perceived exertion, your rate of perceived exertion rather, which means you feel as though you can't continue anymore, or you're at your threshold of sort of giving up on the exercise, gives you a baseline. And all the while this is going on, we're measuring your heart rate. So let's say, just for simplicity's sake, we stop the Buffalo Concussion Treadmill Test, so we stop you walking on the treadmill and your heart rate is 150 beats per minute. The guidelines for your exercise prescription then become 80% of that. So we would take 80% of 150, and that's where we would start your exercise program. And we might say, we want you to go out and walk at that heart rate starting, let's say, 10 minutes a day. Ideally, we want you to get up to 20 to 30 minutes a day. Now, the guidelines for this are, we want the exercise to be sub-symptom threshold, which means we never want you to get symptoms ideally during the exercise, or the sensation or the beginning of symptoms right when you're about to stop. We want you to come away from the exercise feeling good, clarity, maybe you felt better than before you were going in. What we don't want to see is your symptoms be spiking again where you have to take 1 or 2 days off. This is just used as a starting point for exercise prescription, and that, again, it isn't perfect. Even if there's a heart rate that's given, it still might need to be dropped a little bit, depending, again, upon the person, the age, health profile, and a whole other host of factors. We also know that this Buffalo Concussion Treadmill Test has been adopted to the bike. Now, there's not nearly the amount of evidence to support the Buffalo Concussion bike test. I think there's only a couple of small studies. I know there was a study by Dr. Hayter that looked at, and it was a really, really small study, adopting the principles of the Buffalo Concussion Treadmill Test to the bike. It takes a little bit longer for you to get your heart rate up on the bike, so the test takes about twice as long. But this was one of the first studies that we saw that adopted this concept to another piece of cardiovascular equipment, which is good because sometimes people can't walk on a treadmill, or they can't walk at all because of orthopedic conditions, their health profile, maybe they're managing another disease at the time. So this was a great entry-level piece of research to look at maybe adopting some of these principles to other cardio equipment. So the thought behind this is, again, we're giving the system this concept of graded exposure, meaning just a little bit over time, gradually increasing it until we're back to our pre-injury status. We're also allowing the sympathetic nervous system to adopt to these stimuluses in a safe and effective manner, as well as allowing the patient to be resilient and active in their recovery, and also allowing them to adopt positive behaviors and allowing them to be actively involved in the recovery, which we know is, from a psychological perspective, very, very beneficial. Now, let's say you're in a circumstance where you don't have access to a treadmill, or you don't even have access to somebody that is able to do a Buffalo Concussion Treadmill Test with you. We can take some of these principles and maybe adopt them, and this is what I do clinically. And again, you know, this is what I do clinically based on the research in the field of exercise and recovery. This isn't something that is researched as rigorously, but we can exercise people at a percentage of their maximum heart rate. So there are a few different ways you can calculate your maximum heart rate. The easiest way is 220 minus your age, whatever that number is. So let's say you're 40 years old, 220 minus your age, 180 is your maximum heart rate. There are more specific methods. You can use something called the Karvonen method, which looks at what your current resting heart rate is. However, for me, often I'm just trying to keep it as simple as possible. So I use the calculation of 220 minus the person's age. And while it's not perfect, it's a good starting point. And then we can take percentages and start off exercising at those percentages. So typically, for the population of individuals that I see, it's around 65 to 70% of maximum heart rate. I've gone as low as 50%. Now, the challenge is how do you measure heart rate? So there are people that have wearable devices, like, for example, a Fitbit or an Apple Watch. There are people that don't have wearable devices but have a smartphone, and there are plenty of apps that can measure heart rate for free on those devices. And while the particular measurement of the heart rate might not be supremely accurate, we can use that tool as a means of measuring heart rate improvements moving forward. So while the specific number might not be perfect, the measuring device itself and the percentage increase or decrease we can use from that baseline to better prescribe exercise. And then what if somebody has no wearable, they don't have a smartphone, they don't have a watch? Then usually I just use a perceived exertion scale. So 65 or 60 to 70% is usually an exercise pace where you can comfortably maintain a conversation. So that is where I start an individual. I build up tolerance over time, again, with the guidelines of coming away feeling good. And often the way that my first appointment goes is I go through this, I might do Buffalo Concussion Treadmill Test or give a percentage guideline. And then from that point, what the individual's response to their exercise is helps me move forward. So if they came away feeling good and they've got clarity and they felt good for the rest of the day, that means we're kind of along the right track, and then I will progress incrementally from there. If they came away really feeling poorly, I might try it one more time with them to see if there's some adaptation. Usually if they're feeling very poorly after two times, then I make an adjustment or a modification. Now the key to this as well is this is something that should be done under supervision of a physician and somebody that is well-versed in concussion. Because concussions are often multifactorial, complex, and can be persistent in nature, it is important that you're always seeking the advice of a medical professional. So I certainly don't want people listening to just go and adopt this type of exercise without the guidance of someone to help you along the way. Because if there is something that might be perpetuating your symptoms that hasn't been found, then this professional will help you and get you the resources that you need to get back to your pre-injury status. So what are some other considerations outside of just cardiovascular exercise and recovery? One of them is heart rate versus blood pressure. So for example, when we do cardiovascular exercise, our heart rate increases and our blood pressure will also increase, but it doesn't increase at the same rate as if we were doing weightlifting exercise, where we know our heart rate when we go through that Valsalva maneuver, sort of bearing down as if you were going to go to the washroom, that can spike our blood pressure quite substantially. So the way that I return people to exercise is I like to get them doing cardiovascular exercise first. I like to get them up to around 80 to 85% of their maximum heart rate for 30 minutes, 25 to 30 minutes. And somewhere around that time, I will start to introduce resistance training back into the program. Now, I may have already introduced some light body weight training that won't spike blood pressure as much. But typically when I reintroduce resistance training, I'm going at about 50% of what they previously lifted. And I use that as, again, kind of a starting tool for how you're going to respond. And then I usually make small incremental increases in weight over time, again, using that concept of graded exposure. The other thing to keep in mind is that because, again, concussion is multifactorial, there may be other systems that might be affected from the concussion. This might include the eyes, as I mentioned previously, or the balance system. And so as you introduce cardiovascular exercise, all of those symptoms are going to be under stress at the same time. So let's say, for example, you're doing really, really well with your cardiovascular exercise and you introduce some body weight exercise and then you get symptomatic. It may not be from the increases in blood pressure from body weight exercise. It may be from the eyes and their lack of adaptation in moving in transition from high to low or something of that nature. So things definitely aren't as simple as we discuss them in the context of a particular subject when it comes to concussion recovery or injury recovery for that matter as well. But at the end of the day, we do know that post-concussion, there are three big things that we always want to try and address as early as possible in the recovery process. The first is post-concussion headache, which, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, is the most commonly suffered symptom. The second is mood disorder, either the new presence or resurgence of anxiety, depression, or another mood disorder, as well as sleep, as we know that sleep is very, very brain restorative and is a key tool in restoring any individual back towards their pre-injury status. And so just in closing, I just wanted to mention a few things. I think that, again, with concussion, it's really important to respect the process, particularly in the acute phase. Having a degree of patience, but taking that active recovery approach allows patients, again, to be actively involved in their care. There's no need to sit in a dark room. There has been plenty of research now to suggest that that is not the case. Pure rest beyond 48 hours typically is not needed. And most of the research that's returning individuals to some degree of exercise, which is in the majority of cases cardiovascular in nature, is inside of 4 days. This is done through some means of controlling heart rate, either through a heart rate monitor, some type of wearable device, or giving individuals the guidance of rate of perceived exertion. The majority of steps to return to activity are progressive in nature over time. And it's certainly not the only intervention. As I said before, context is everything. So looking at everything from social factors to biological factors to psychological factors is how the majority of concussions and musculoskeletal injuries in general are being managed these days. So I hope that you found that little topic on exercise and return to activity post-concussion helpful. My question for you is, if you've suffered a concussion, how did you return to your pre-injury status and what was helpful for you? I'd love to know in the comments below. As always, folks, I hope that you found this episode to be of value to you. Have a great weekend, and we will see you in the next one.